This is episode 20 of the Great Speech Podcast on How to Get Booked and Paid to Speak, an interview with Grant Baldwin.
Let's go.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top. So get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up, listen up, listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Bonjour, bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va? Je suis Colarelation Nike, votre communication skills super coach. Okay, that's enough French for now. That's pretty much all I know. Welcome back, people. Thank you for joining me again for another episode of the Great Speech Podcast. You know how much I appreciate it and how much I enjoy having you with me. Make sure you click that subscribe button if you haven't already. You're not going to want to miss any of these episodes, so that's the best way to make sure you don't. Do a review because I give people shout outs on this very podcast if they've done one. And of course, please share it with a friend because I'm sure you know somebody that could benefit from improving their communication skills generally. And you don't want to be selfish and keep me all to yourself. So make sure you do that. Another great episode this week. In fact, for me, actually, one of the episodes that I've really, really been looking forward to because it's has a lot of value for me personally. So this week I'm interviewing a guy called Grant Baldwin, and he is the founder of the Speaker Lab program, which is a program to help people build speaking careers. He's also the host of the Speaker Lab podcast, which basically talks about the same thing, but in a podcast. But most importantly, and the reason why I've got him on right at this moment is because he's just published a book called The Successful Speaker, you know that I don't do edits, right? So I can't even edit this out. Sorry, Grant, let's try that again. So the book is called The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for booking gigs, getting paid and building your platform. Yes, I just butchered that. But it's a really wonderful book because it really does talk about how to become a speaker. And Grant really is the go-to guy for this. I've followed him personally for quite a while, so I was really pleased to have him on. And we have a really kind of engaging talk. He covers obviously the steps, or the 5 steps as he describes them, to becoming a speaker and getting paid for it in particular. But he covers specific things like the 2 essential marketing tools that every speaker must have if they're serious about speaking, or what to do even if you don't think you have anything useful to say and to speak about. And he gives a very simple approach for how to deal with that and cover that. He covers the kind of specific steps you can take to finding gigs that will pay you as a speaker, and the 3 different variables that will pretty much determine how your talk will go. One of the things as well, actually, which was a bit of a problem for me, was what to do when people ask you, okay, give me some examples of your speaking, and you actually don't have anything at that moment, which is actually one of my problems, because I do speak, I do get paid to speak. I haven't yet taken it to the level that I really want to, which is why in particular that I wanted to get Grant on. And one of my particular problems is I've done lots and lots of speaking and I've just never really kind of captured the footage properly. So he gives a little tip as to how to deal with that as well. So it's a really, really engaging episode. In a way, what I love the most about it was that Grant, and this is even by his own description, is a really normal dude, right? He's a really normal guy. So, you know, he wasn't previously a celebrity, and that's why he gets booked and paid to speak. You know, in a way, if a celebrity tells you, oh, this is the steps to go through, all you'll be thinking is, yeah, that's great, but you're a celebrity, so how's that relevant to me? So Grant really started his speaking career from absolutely nothing and built it up over time, and then has really condensed all the things he's learned into the book, and of course his program, which kind of goes into more detail as well. So it's really really, really, I think, a lot of value in this, because it works for people like you and me, which is people who are trying to improve their communication skills. And if you're like me, you're thinking, you know what, I actually have something I can say. Is there any way I can actually do that more? So this is a fantastic episode. You are not going to want to miss any of it. So make sure you turn out the noise, turn up your ears and listen, because Grant has got some stuff to share. Here's Grant. And welcome back, my great communicators, to the Great Speech Podcast. It's fantastic to have you guys here. And I do have with us Grant Baldwin, who is the author of a great book that you're going to really want to hear about as we discussed. Hello, Grant. Are you there?
Caller, thanks for letting me hang out with you, man. I appreciate it.
No, I really appreciate it. And as I was saying to you earlier, that I personally have been waiting for you to write a book for a very long time. And I know that the interest in the topic that we're going to be covering really so high. A lot of people have asked me, because I'm into communication stuff, look, you know, I really want to start speaking and maybe becoming a speaker, getting paid. And I've always kind of had to defer them a little because I do know about it, but it's not my area of specialty. So I'm really, really pleased to have you on the podcast, and thanks for agreeing.
You bet. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so as you know, I start all my episodes with a quote, which when I have a guest, I leave to the guest speaker. So do you have a quote for us? You want to tell us who said it, or whether it's a proverb or something like that, and then give us the quote?
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes is, and I honestly, I'm not sure if I heard this somewhere or if this is something I came up with. So we'll just leave the source unknown at the moment. But that's something that I speak a lot about and try to think a lot about just in a day-to-day way. But the quote being that who you are is more important than what you do. Who you are is more important than what you do. Meaning, if we are great, you know, podcasters or entrepreneurs or speakers or whatever it is that we may do, if we are great in all those ways, but we drop the ball as, you know, as husbands or as fathers or as moms or as wives or as sons and daughters and friends, and if we are the shell of a human being, we are doing it wrong. And so I try to remind myself that I'm very motivated, I'm very driven, I'm very ambitious, but I don't want to pursue those things at the detriment of being a husband, of being a father. Like, those are the two things that are the most important roles to me. And so I try to remind myself regularly that who you are is more important than what you do.
That is a great quote. And actually really, yeah, because I think a lot of us kind of often have our heads down and we're just getting on with life, right? And we think that it's really all about what we do as opposed to the greater question of who we are as people. So yeah, I do like that. I like that. Although I was surprised because I actually expected kind of maybe a biblical quote or something, because you're a youth pastor, yeah, right? Or at least, yep. Are you still, or did you just used to be?
Nah, it's been a minute since I was that. So yeah, if we go back in time, in high school, I was really involved in my local church. My youth pastor had a big impact in my life. And so that really resonated with me. I was like, I want to do that. Like, that, if I can make the kind of impact for other students that he has made for me, that just seems incredibly rewarding and fulfilling. And so that was kind of the path I was on. So I worked, I went to Bible college and then later worked at a local church as a youth pastor. And so there I actually had a lot of opportunities to speak. So that's part of where I kind of got the bug from, of just like, I enjoyed speaking. Speaking was something I was doing on a regular basis at the church. And so I'm still involved in my local church today, but not in any type of a pastoral role.
Right. It's interesting to hear that background, because very often, for instance, with a lot of speakers, when they talk with a lot of singers, rather, when they talk about, you know, how did they become singers, they often talk about their background in the church. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that that's your background from speaking as well. You've got family wise, I think you've got you're married, family, some kids, right?
We do. We got three girls, so it's me and a house full of women. So it's awesome. So, wife and I, we were high school sweethearts. We met when I was a freshman in high school. She was a junior, so I married myself an older woman.
And, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, and then our three little girls. They're time this recording. They're 13, 11, and 9. So yeah, it's me and a bunch of ladies. It's the best.
Great. Well, shout out to them. I know you're planning to go to London at some point, so I said I was going to share some tips with you on where to go and stuff like that. Actually, I've got a question before we kind of get into the meat of it, because I'm, as well as a kind of communications coach, I'm a lawyer as well. And one of the things that I get at home, you know, if we get into an argument of something, it's like, stop being a lawyer to me. And I wondered, actually, if you, since you're into speaking and giving speeches, do you get the kind of, don't give me a speech, Dad, or something like that? Do they bring it in that way?
I don't get a ton of that, but they do give me grief if I, the tone of my voice shifts. You know, they're kind of like, you just went into speaker mode. Or sometimes, you know, if you're just kind of like, you know, you're having a normal conversation with them and then you want to impart some form of fatherly wisdom. You have some teachable moment. So one of the things that they've said before is like, Dad's doing his wisdom talk, or he's doing his wisdom voice, right? So it's just kind of like the tone of your and I, my wife gives me grief even whenever we do podcasts, because if you and I are just kind of, you know, we're chatting a little bit beforehand, and as soon as we hit record, both of us, we kind of go into podcast speaker mode.
Yeah,
you know?
Voice, right.
So I get some grief from them on that.
Yeah. No, I just wondered about that. That's cool. Okay, so listen, Grant, as I said, there's so much that I want to get from you, pick your brain on, because it really is a topic that I know a lot of people are interested in, which is speaking. How do I become a speaker? How do I get, in particular, paid to speak? And when I saw your book, The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for Booking Gigs, Getting Paid, and Building a Platform, it really just spoke exactly to the topic that that I knew that we had to cover. Just on the title, actually, because a lot of times people will go for maybe an abstract title and then the subtitle gives, you know, the information, but yours is very direct about what you're talking about. Were there any thoughts about as to how to approach that?
Yeah, definitely. We talked through a bunch of different options on titles, and one of the things that was, I don't know, challenging, but trying to just figure out like how to quantify, you know, is it what the process is that we're teaching and what it is that we're doing. Like, we, for a little while, we talked about just calling the book speaker, just a, you know, single word. So we played with that idea for a little while. So it's part, you know, part of naming a book is a really big deal. And so we wanted to get it right, and real happy with the outcome and happy with the finished product.
And you say we, that I saw that Jeff Goins, I couldn't work out whether he ghost wrote it or wrote it with you. It was a collaboration.
Yeah, so it was basically the way we kind of joke about it is he was a non-ghostwriter. And so the way it kind of it came to be was Jeff and I have been friends for several years. And he, for those that aren't familiar, he's written and published several books, is a very well-known author, very successful author, is a very, very good writer, knows the publishing space really, really well. And so he texted me a few years ago and said, hey, have you ever thought about writing a book? And at the time, I was just kind of like, not really. Like, I get the value of a book. I see the importance of a book. But there's enough other things I was working on that it just wasn't a high priority for me. And so we kind of chit-chatted about it a little bit, and ultimately he said, hey, here's an idea. What if I wrote the book for you? Like, you already have all of this content, you have all this knowledge, you have all this experience, you have all the, you know, the podcast episodes and interviews and the course material and yada yada yada. Like, what if we take all of that, I take that and synthesize it into a book? I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. So we kind of talked about what that would look like, and ultimately that's what we did. So it's all of my content and intellectual property and knowledge, and he was kind of the scribe for it. He was the one that brought it to life and made it happen. And I'm really, really happy with the process of it. I think a lot of times when people use ghostwriters, which a lot of people do, it's something that they try to downplay and they try to, you know, pretend like they wrote every single word. And the reality is like they didn't. And I think I'm proud to talk about, like, I know the content is really well done and it's a lot of knowledge that I shared, but I know Jeff did a phenomenal job of turning it into a book. And so it's also become, I think, a good selling piece for people who know Jeff or are familiar with Jeff, who may not know anything about me, but are like, yeah, I like Jeff, so I'll pick up the book. So it's definitely been a win in multiple ways.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, all right, so Grant, let's get into it. So I am a person, and I say to myself, I wake up one morning and I say to myself, you know what? I really want to become a speaker. Where do I start? I know that's not the best place to start, but what should be my first thought or my first approach?
Yeah, so inside the book, we cover what we call the Speaker Success Roadmap. This makes an acronym of SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K. And so let me give you just kind of the high level of overview, and then we can kind of dig in wherever you want. So the S is for select a problem to solve. Select a problem to solve. I think this is where most speakers have the most difficult time, is because for most speakers, we just enjoy speaking. Speaking is just a lot of fun, but speakers have to get really clear on two things. Have to get clear on who do you speak to and what is the problem that you solve for them. You do not want to try to speak to everyone. So the speakers will say, well, who do I speak to? I speak to people. I speak to humans. My message is for everyone. Like that doesn't work. And in the same way that, you know, if we are to ask, what do you speak about, or what's the problem that you solve? If you say, well, what do you want me to speak about? I can speak about anything. Like that just doesn't work. So you really have to be clear. You have to be specific on that. The next part of the process is the P, which is prepare your talk. Prepare your talk. And so this comes down to, how do you actually create a talk? You know who you're speaking to. You know what the problem is you're going to solve. We've established that in the S. But the P, how do you create the talk? Well, what does that solution look like? So we dig into, you know, how do you create the talk? How do you deliver the talk? How do you interact with the audience, using humor, using slides, all of that we dig into in that section. The E is establish yourself as the expert. Establish yourself as the expert. So this comes down to two key marketing tools that every speaker needs to have. You need to have a website and you need to have a demo video. So just because you're clear on who you speak to, just because you're clear on what you talk about, what's the problem that you solve, even if you have your talk ready, now we got to have some marketing materials to start the ball in motion and to share with others what it is that you do so that they have enough information to make a decision on hiring you. The A is acquire paid speaking gigs. Acquire paid speaking gigs. Now, this is the part that a lot of people want to skip to. We want to fast forward to. Grant, that's what we're here for. I want to book gigs. Yes. But again, this is why you have to have those other foundational pieces in place first before we get to this part. So just because you have a website, just because you have a video doesn't mean anyone cares. So now we want to put in a system and a process in place for how do you actually find and book gigs on a consistent basis. And then the last part is the K, know when to scale. Know when to scale, meaning there's a lot of people who are interested in speaking, but also probably interested in writing a book or doing a course or doing coaching or doing consulting or doing, you know, a blog or doing a podcast or doing any number of things. And so the reality is that you can do all the things, but you can't do all the things at once. So something's going to come first, something's going to come last. And so we want to help people understand how does speaking fit into the mix and how do you make sure that you are focused on the right activities in your business. So again, that's kind of the big picture framework that we walk through inside the book, The Successful Speaker. Let's dig in wherever you want.
Wow. You know, that's already fantastic. Because what I love about that, and you say it in the title of the book, it's five steps, but it's a really clear framework that seems to kind of just demystify the whole process. Because I think you're right. A lot of people will wake up saying, I want to be a speaker, and then say, oh, where do I get paid? And actually, what I like is the way you've broken it down. I also like, by the way, that the acronym you used actually relates to the topic.
Hopefully that makes it memorable.
Right.
When we were working, and in fact, we worked on that. We came up with that actually before Jeff and I started working on the book. We worked on that framework a couple years ago or so, and just kind of writing it out on the and trying to really just think through on a whiteboard, like what is the process that people need to go through there. And so that's worked out well.
Yeah, no, it's good because, you know, so often you'll get an acronym like, you know, ADRK that means nothing at all.
Right.
So it's just, you're never going to remember it because it doesn't trigger. So this is a really good one. A lot that I imagine goes into the process because you've put your thoughts into the book, which will outline that. I know you've got the Speaker Lab program as well, which presumably goes into even more depth, does it?
So we actually have a course called Booked and Paid to Speak, which teaches people how do you actually find and book gigs. So it's some of the same content. The difference is that whenever you are reading a book, you tend to just kind of read it in isolation. And so the reality is like, you're going to run into some questions. You're going to run into some roadblocks. There's going to be people who will read the book and say, can you just help me implement this and apply this? Or I'm having trouble understanding how this applies to me or what this would look like. And so that's where we have a couple different training and coaching programs where myself, our team, other students, we can be in the weeds with you and help you kind of process and think some of these things through and help you to ultimately take action and see results in your speaking business.
Okay, cool. In terms of the different steps then, right? So you've got the select a problem first. And one of the things I know you've talked about in the book and you kind of mentioned it is be kind of more specific, almost niche, right? Rather than being general. And I think the instinct of a lot of people will be to say, well, to be honest, you know, I'm a speaker. I can speak about anything. So what do you want me to talk about? So why do you say that actually it's better to be more intentional about a particular area, particular industry, particular topic?
Yeah, so we understand this in other ways outside of speaking. So let me give you a couple of examples. So one of the things that we talk about is that you want to be the steakhouse and not the buffet. Be the steakhouse and not the buffet. What we mean by that is if we were going to go looking for a good steak dinner, we have a choice. Like we could go to a buffet where steak is one of 100 different things that they offer and they're all mediocre. Or we could go to a steakhouse where they do one thing, but they do that one thing really, really well. So at a steakhouse, they don't do lasagna, they don't do pizza, they don't do tacos, they do steak and that's it. And they're really, really good at that. And because of that, because they're saying, no, we do this and not other things, it makes it easier for them to attract the right type of customers to their restaurant and to repel the wrong type of customers. And because they're narrow and focused, it also allows them to charge a premium, right? So here's another way to think about this. You mentioned that you are an attorney. Is there a specific type of law that you practice?
Yeah, I do kind of commercial litigation and employment law.
Okay, so commercial litigation, right? So let's think about all the different types of law opportunities that exist, right? And you would know them way better than I do. So whether that's like, you slipped and fell, some type of accident, or a divorce attorney, or you're buying a property, or a tax attorney, or like you want to sue someone, or a criminal attorney, like the list goes on and on and on and on, right?
Sure.
And so if I was running into some type of random legal challenge and I had a question, I'm probably going to look for, I'll give an exact example. I live in the Nashville, Tennessee area. And so we had my CPA and I we were talking through a couple different tax ideas and we were like, here's something that I think we could do specific to Tennessee, but we need to find a attorney who knows Tennessee tax law. And so we kind of dug around and found someone who specifically specialized in this one specific thing versus saying like, no, just any Tennessee lawyer will do, or my buddy Collar, he's an attorney. So he can help with us. It's like, no. Like I want to go find this one specific person who does this one specific type of law. Right.
Right.
And so because of that, it makes it easier for me to find the right type of person and, versus just trying to find any type of attorney. And so again, we get this when it comes to a restaurant or to practicing law, but for some reason we think whenever it comes to being a speaker, we think that we need to spread the net as far and wide as possible. I speak to anybody about anything, but that doesn't work. And it's counterintuitive because we think the more things we can speak about or the more people we speak to, the more opportunities that we can have. But again, the more narrow, the more focused we are, the easier it is to actually be able to find and book gigs.
Yeah, I think it's almost like a fear of missing out. It's, if I don't say I do that, then I'm missing out on those opportunities. But as you say, in a way, by spreading yourself too thin, you'll miss out on everything because no one will see you as the specialist or expert in
it. And nobody will trust you.
Right. But what if someone feels like, I want to be a speaker, but what can I talk about? I don't know anything. So how can I be a speaker? Because there's that imposter syndrome that a lot of people have. But I know that in the book you talk about that even if you're at that level, you can still actually find a way to speak. But how do people approach that?
Yeah, let me give an example on that. So my wife, I mentioned we have three daughters. We homeschool our daughters, and I say we very generously. My wife does 99.9% of it. And so she's been homeschooling our daughters for like 5-6 years, something like that. And she by no means feels like she's, the world's greatest expert on homeschooling, but she's been doing it for several years. So she's certainly learned a few things about it and is very knowledgeable on it. So a couple of weeks ago, we had some friends of ours that are across the street. Their oldest daughter starts kindergarten in a couple months. And so they have been kind of going back and forth and chewing on whether or not they are open and considering homeschooling. And so we went over to their house a couple weeks ago and hung out with them for a little while. And they just peppered my wife with questions. And so my wife is kind of going like, well, I don't really feel like I'm an expert. But to them, they view her as the expert because she knows more about the subject or topic than they do. And so you don't have to be the world's greatest expert on a topic to be able to speak on it, right? So right now we're talking about public speaking and how do you find a book gigs. Mm. I recognize, like, there are certainly people who know more about it than I do, but I also recognize I'm pretty knowledgeable on it, and I know that I can help people. And so you don't have to be like the world's greatest expert on it to be able to speak on it. So as long as you feel like, hey, I know something on this, and what may seem like common knowledge to you may be mind-boggling to other people. So I would not underestimate what you have knowledge in that other people don't.
Got it. Actually, there was a line that actually made me openly chuckle in your book when you talk about your wife homeschooling. You said that, well, I'm like the PE teacher flirting with the principal.
Right, so right.
she does the bulk of it, and, you know, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yep.
That made me chuckle, actually. Okay, so we've selected our problem. I know there's going to be a lot going into it, but okay, so we move on to the P, which was prepare your talk.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Right, so what's the biggest mistake that people make when they start thinking about preparing the talk?
Well, I think it's really easy for speakers just to assume, like, well, I don't know, I'll just scribble down a couple of ideas and hop up on stage and kind of wing it and hope it all works out. Like, that just doesn't work. Like, the best speakers on the planet are the ones that spend so much time practicing and rehearsing and going over their content and material. So by the time they get up on stage, it may look like they're just winging it. It may look like they're just making it up. But the reality is they've spent so much time practicing that it looks like that. One of the best things you can do, any speaker can do at any level, is to really spend some time practicing, rehearsing, going over your content and your material. So before I give a speech, especially if it's new material that I haven't really presented on before, I will spend just hours and hours and hours going over that. So again, by the time I get up, I'm really comfortable and confident. And it just helps me to also feel a lot less nervous going into it because I know where I'm going, I know the material, and I've done the work versus just hopping up and winging it and hope it all magically works out.
Yeah, I mean, many clients that I train, their big concern is, oh, I'm just not a natural, you know. And I keep saying to people that no, it's very few people are natural anyway. You know, even someone like Steve Jobs just practiced and practiced an insane amount before he got as good as he actually did. So you can really achieve a lot if you focus on practice and preparation and rehearsal. So
yes, very much.
I'm very, very glad to hear you say that. I know you talk about in terms of talks using stories as well. Mm-hmm. What, you know, I'm a story freak. I love stories, but why do you say that works in particular with talks like this?
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. Like, stories are very, very memorable. They're very, very relatable. So if I said right now, let me tell you a story, like the whole audience, everyone listening right now will immediately perk up. You ought to try that sometimes as a speaker, right? Next presentation you're giving where you know that where you have a story to tell, open it by saying, let me tell you a story. And you'll notice that the audience starts paying attention, right? And the reason
Can I just ask you something on that, actually, you go on. So let me tell you a story, so which I love. There's some people, though, that go just kind of a few words further, which is something like, you know, let me tell you a story that's really funny. Do you recommend adding that as well or not? I have a view on that. Oh, good.
No, because then you're setting yourself up for failure, right?
Exactly.
So if someone, like one of a speaker's worst nightmares is like if the person that's introducing you says, okay, I want to introduce you to Grant. Grant is the funniest person I've ever met. Then like all of a sudden, like the bar is set too high. It's unrealistic. Yeah. So no, you don't need to say, you know, let me tell you the story. You're all going to cry by the end of it. Like, no. Like, let's just let the story play out and unfold. But let me tell you a story. Because again, the audience at that moment has no idea, is this going to be funny? Is this going to be sad? Is this going to be depressing? Is this going to be motivational? Is this going to be uplifting? Like, we have no idea where this is going to go, but people are drawn to stories. The other thing that's interesting is stories are very, very memorable. So let me give an example. My oldest daughter, she's 13. She goes to our church's youth group every Wednesday night. And so I take her and then hour and a half, 2 hours later, I come back, pick her up. And so I always ask her, as soon as she gets in the car, I always ask her, hey, what did the youth pastor talk about tonight? And this happened last night. She hops in the car, I ask her what the youth pastor talked about. And generally she can give me like a sentence or two, you know, right. Sometimes she's just like, oh yeah. What did he talk? I was like, you were just in there. How do you not remember? But a lot of times she'll remember and she can recount and retell a story. Oh, he told this story. Let me tell you this story. Da, 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 da. And she'll go on and tell this story. And so it's funny to me that again, she just came out of there. She may not remember, you know, much more than like kind of a one sentence summary of what it is, but she could retell the story of what of a story that was told from stage. And even for me, I can think of, I remember, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, I picked her up And she was retelling the story to me that he had told. And I still remember the story. I wasn't there. I didn't hear. I'm hearing it secondhand from my daughter. But I still remember the story. And so people remember stories. And so stories are just, they're incredibly, incredibly powerful, incredibly relatable, and incredibly memorable as well.
Yeah, and far easier to tell as well. It's one of the things that I say to people, it's a double whammy. Your audience prefer them, they remember them, and as a speaker it's actually far easier to deliver a story than it is to kind of deliver data and facts and all of that. So it kind of really has a double impact. I saw in the book that you referenced, I think Michael Port, who does lots of stuff and kind of his ideas on storytelling and things like that. So are you friends with Michael, or did you just study him?
Yeah. No, Michael and I have been friends for several years, and they do a phenomenal job. He and his wife Amy and Heroic Public Speaking is a great organization that teaches really the art and kind of theater side of public speaking and presentation. So they're great people.
And then when it comes to practicing your speech as well, you know, there are a lot of times I'll tell people to record it, like, you know, even if you just get your smartphone and just record it and then watch it back. But I saw you say that in terms of what some people do, which is look in the mirror and practice it, you don't recommend that. Any particular reason why not?
Well, I think you can do it. I think you just have to remember a couple things. One is that what you do in front of a mirror and then what you do on stage may be two different things. And so sometimes watching back the video may be a better representation of what you're actually like. Like you may think, you know, whenever I speak, I didn't realize I used a certain filler word, or I did that with, why is my face doing that? I didn't realize I was doing that. You know, like you don't make the connection whenever you are doing it in the mirror, or you are versus whenever you're speaking live and watching it back. So I think that's definitely good to watch it back to kind of get some sense. The other thing would be your energy and your size needs to match the room. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you and I are just talking to each other in kind of this one-on-one setting right now, the way we would communicate if there was 1,000 people in the room, the way a speaker would speak if there's 1,000 people in the room, is just different, right? And it would be slightly different if there's 10 people in the room. And so your energy has to match that of the room size. And so if you're just standing in front of a mirror and you're just like, I feel like my facial expressions are really, really big, but I'm standing right there 2 feet in front of the mirror. But if you're speaking to 500 people, the person at the back of the room feels like, it doesn't look like they're doing anything with their face, you know? So, so it's certainly like, I wouldn't like completely discount, you know, looking in the mirror, but be aware that, in some settings, what may seem like it's a big thing to you in a mirror may look like a tiny thing to someone sitting in the back of the room watching you speak.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then how, from an audience's point of view, like, so how do you deal with the audience doesn't get involved, or a heckler, you know, what should you think about or practice or prepare for when it comes to your audience interaction and how that might go?
Yeah, I think it's pretty rare, like, that someone would actually heckle you. Like, I've done hundreds and hundreds of gigs, and you may have people who don't pay attention, who are looking at their phone, who are falling asleep, who are any number of things. I don't know that I've ever had anyone that's like truly, you know, mocking or heckling or anything like that. And so
it's funny you say that though, but that seems to be kind of an outsized worry for people. That
it is.
I always get that people, you know, what do I do with a heckler? It's like, well, it's just not going to happen, but what do I do?
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's more common like in the stand-up comedy world where people are in a bar and everyone may be slightly intoxicated, and so they're inhibitions are a bit more loose, and they're going to just start throwing things out there and saying things like that. Yeah, that's a different environment. But if you're at a conference or an event, like, people are pretty professional, and even if they find you, you know, boring or uninteresting, they're not going to start heckling you or mocking you or anything like that. At least not to your face or there in the audience. So
how do you recover an audience that you feel is losing interest a bit?
Well, I think there's a couple things to remember. Is there are times where there are three different variables and factors that go into what makes a talk good. You know, you come off stage and you're like, how did that talk go? And there's three different variables. There is the audience themselves. And what I mean by that is, let's imagine right before you get up to speak that someone, you know, that the person introducing you says, hey, you know, as soon as the speaker's done, unfortunately, we're going to have some budget cuts and we're going to have to lay off half of you. Half of you are going to lose your job as soon as the speaker is finished. finish. So, all right, please welcome to the stage, Grant. And I was like, yes. Then the audience is not going to hear a word that you say, you know? So they're they're just going to be checked out. Another factor is going to be the room. So the room can work for you or it can work against you. I'll give an example. A couple years ago, I was speaking at a conference in New Jersey, and I get there, and it's kind of this big industrial warehouse where it was set up, and there's 2,000 people there for this event, and I was doing a keynote at it, and so I do this keynote for 2,000 people. The room is set up for 2,000 people, so it works really well. But right afterwards, they said, "All right, we need you to do a workshop." I was planning on doing a workshop right afterwards for about 50-100 people, and we're going to have you do it in the same room. Now, 2,000 people sitting in a room that seats 2,000 people works really, really well. Doing a workshop for 50 people in a room that seats 2,000 people is a disaster, right? Because the room just swallows the group up. So in that case, I recognized like it went okay. It wasn't anything amazing, but there's also a big variable and factor there that was outside of my control. So one factor is going to be the audience. One factor is going to be the room. And the other factor is going to be you as a speaker. There's times where it's like the audience was great. The room was great. I just didn't have my best stuff. I didn't prepare like I should have, or I just wasn't on my game for whatever reason. So you absolutely have to recognize like there are times when a talk doesn't go well and it's not your fault. And there's times where a talk doesn't go well and it's absolutely your fault and you just weren't ready and you didn't treat it like a professional. So there's certainly a lot of variables that go into whether or not a talk goes well.
Yeah, and I guess the experience is what will help you kind of deal with that and overcome that as it comes along. Okay, I'm sure there's much more in that, but let's move on. So I think E was to establish your expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yep, establish yourself as the expert.
So
yep.
what are kind of some of the big things that we should be thinking about to do that?
Yeah, the two big things are going to be your website and your video. And so again, if you don't have a website, it's hard for people to take you seriously. You know, if you reached out to someone and they were considering hiring you. But you're like, well, I don't have a website or I'm working on it. It'll be ready soon. It's just hard to take you seriously, you know? So, so having a website's really important because people want to kind of anonymously do some homework to figure out if you're a good fit for their event. So having a website's important. The other thing that's important is a demo video. Now, a demo video is definitely something that people can get a little bit hung up on and they can feel tend to overthink it. But, a way to think about a demo video is think about it like a movie trailer. Before most people go see a movie, they want to see a trailer. They don't need to see the whole thing to determine whether or not they're going to like this or it's a fit for them. They just need to see like 2 or 3 minutes. And so the point of a movie trailer and the point of a demo video is to make people want to see more. You want to give people just a little bit of a snapshot of if you hire me and I come speak, this is how I'm going to speak. This is how I'm going to interact with your audience. This is how the audience is going to respond. And they kind of just have a sense of like, this is what the experience is going to be. It just gives them a sense of that and gives them comfort and confidence in hiring you. Because you got to remember that event planners are in the risk mitigation business. And what I mean by that is whenever they put you up on stage, they are taking a bit of a risk. Like if you do a great job, they look like the hero, whoever it was that hired you. But if you do a horrible job, or if you embarrass them, or if you're inappropriate or whatever, then you make the event planner look bad and it reflects poorly on them. So they need to see something. They're not going to just take your word for it. No, just trust me. I'm a good speaker. Like, I don't know about that. I want to see something and I'll decide for myself whether or not maybe you are a great speaker. You're just not what we are looking for. So having a website, having a demo video are two critical pieces.
And if I'm just starting out, so I've selected my area, my niche, I've prepared my talk, but I haven't done anything that is on video, then what do I do then about my demo video?
Yeah, it kind of feels like this chicken egg situation where I need footage in order to get gigs, I need gigs in order to get footage. You know, what do you do then? So there's a couple options. One would be that you could find some type of local event that you could speak at for free with the sole purpose of getting footage. Now, if you're going to do this, you want to, again, you want to make sure you're doing this in the type of setting where someone's hiring you to speak. So you want to go to like a ballroom, a banquet hall, a conference center, a convention center, something like that, where someone's actually like looking for a speaker to speak in that type of setting. So that's one scenario. The other option is, this feels a little weird, but you can certainly do this, is you could film yourself speaking in an empty room. Now, again, if you're going to do this, you want to do this again, a theater, auditorium, something like that, where people are going to actually hire you to speak. So don't record this in your kitchen or your bathroom or something like that, because nobody's hiring you to speak in your bathroom. So Again, it feels weird. It feels a little bit odd, but it can work really, really effectively. I'll give you an example. A couple years ago, one of my demo videos that I had was just it was 3 minutes or so of just tight shots and tight cuts of me from one talk. I gave this one talk on stage, and it's just kind of clips of that talk. And the whole video, the only person you see is me. You never see a shot of the audience. You never see a shot of anybody else on stage. You don't see anything else other than me on stage. And so I'll show clips of that, and I'll ask people like, hey, how many people were in the audience? And people are like, I have no clue, because you don't see anybody in the audience. You have no idea. There could have been one person. There could have been no people. There could have been thousands of people. There are actually 3,000 people in the audience, but you don't see any of them. You just see me on stage. And so the point being that, again, it may feel a little bit weird at first whenever you're recording yourself in an empty room, but it works. Now, the other thing I would say is just kind of a caveat here is to work with what you've got and improve as you go. Work with what you've got and improve as you go. Do it with excellence, but improve as you go. So I've had probably 6 or 7 different demo videos, had 4 or 5 different iterations of websites. In fact, the Speaker Lab, the company that I run where we teach and train speakers, we literally just came out with a new website as of this recording, like a week or so ago. And so this is like, I think our 3rd or 4th different website. So don't feel like whatever website or video you create, like, oh, that's it. You know, I got to nail it. It's going to be perfect forever and ever and ever. Like, you want to do it, do it well, do it with excellence. But also recognize that as you get better footage, as you get more dialed into what you're doing, as you get more resources to create better footage and better videos and better websites, that you can improve. So don't feel like this is the only thing that you're ever going to have. You're creating version 1.0. But again, work with what you've got and improve as you go.
That makes a lot of sense. And I like that because it also frees people. Especially what I liked about the book and your approach is because it feels... oh my goodness, where do I start? Very alien. It really helps to have something broken down for wherever you are in the process, you can get going. Because I know a big concern of people is, well, how will I get a video if I haven't done speaking gigs? How will I get speaking gigs if I don't have a video? So it's good to have a process that allows you to achieve that, even if you don't have the kind of the initial video as well. So yeah, very, very useful. Okay, so that then takes us on to acquiring speaking gigs, right? Acquiring paid gigs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Big thing, of course, I know people is, oh, well, gosh, how do I approach getting paid? You know, should I price myself high? Should I price myself low? What should our approach be on that?
Yeah. So again, now you have your website, now you have your video. It's more than just that. So just because you have those things in place doesn't mean anybody cares. So you want to actually do something that kind of starts the ball in motion. And so one of the simplest things you can do is to make sure everyone in your sphere of influence, everyone in your network knows that you're a speaker. People won't think of you as a speaker if you don't tell them that you're a speaker. Now, you may be thinking like, but there's nobody in my sphere of influence, not, you know, my parents or friends or family or coworkers or colleagues, or there's nobody that I know that hires speakers. And that may be true. You may not know of anyone, but they may know someone who is a speaker.
Right.
They may know someone who's on a committee or a board or someone who's planning an event or someone who's looking for a speaker. And they will never think to recommend you if they don't know that you are a speaker. So you want to make sure that you are connecting the dots for them and make sure that everybody knows via, you know, social media, knows about your website, knows about your video, knows that you're a speaker, knows that this is a key thing to what you do, and also knows like who you speak to and what's the problem that you solve. So again, it goes back to you. You mentioned we were talking a little bit beforehand that you're in London. I mentioned my family and I were going to come visit London, and so I'm immediately saying, okay, what are the restaurants we should visit, or what are the places we should go to? And so there are going to be places that you tell me about, but if you didn't know, like, oh, I didn't even know that was a restaurant, like, you're not going to recommend a restaurant that you didn't know it was a restaurant, right? So they have to let you know. Just because they have a restaurant doesn't mean anybody knows about it. They got to let people know, like, here's a restaurant, here's the type of food that we offer here. And that way, whenever I come to you and say, hey, here's what we're looking for, my kids like this, or here's something that would be fun, you're able to say, oh, yep, perfect. I got a great spot for you. You're trying to be that for other people. When someone says, hey, it's kind of random, but I'm looking for a speaker. Oh yeah. You need to talk to my friend Grant. You need to talk to my friend Collar. They would be great speakers for your event. But again, they won't think of that unless you tell them. So speaking is very much a momentum business. My friend Michael Port says the more you speak, the more you speak, because speaking leads to other speaking, but you've got to do something that starts the ball in motion.
And it is a business, right? I see you talk about it in those terms, that think of it as a business. So you be very intentional about what you do, as opposed to just kind of putting, you know, hoping that things will land in your lap without doing much about it.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, just like, again, just because you have a website, or just because you're like, I don't know, I think it'd be kind of cool to be a speaker, like that means squat. Like, nobody yeah. cares. And so you have to be really proactive and actually going out and finding and booking gigs.
And we can just reach out to event planners and conferences and say, hey, are you looking for a speaker? You know, is it as simple as that?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. And there's a lot of nuance to it. But the best places to start are conferences and groups that are already looking for speakers. So, you know, XYZ conference, you don't have to convince them to hire a speaker. They're already planning on hiring a speaker. You're just showing them why you are a good fit for the event. And so think of it that way, of looking for what are the events, what are the organizations, what are the associations, what are the groups or gatherings that I would be a good fit for. So let's imagine that you are you're an attorney. So let's say that you're speaking to other attorneys. There are conferences, associations, events that are geared towards attorneys. And so what are those? And they are probably looking for speakers that you could potentially be a speaker for. And so starting conversations with them is one of the simplest ways to get going.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you give loads of examples and options in the book. So everybody go out and buy the book. That is going to be by far your best starting point, and then take it from there. And then the final K is for know when to scale. So give us kind of just an outline of what we should be thinking about there.
Yeah, again, like we kind of touched on earlier, there's a lot of people who are interested in speaking, but are also interested in, you know, any number of other things. And so there's it's not that that one is better or worse than the other. And what I mean by that is there's some speakers who want to speak 100 times a year and some speakers who want to speak, you know, 5 times a year. And they both are fine. But you just have to be really clear about what it is that you are trying to accomplish as a speaker, and make sure that your business is built around that. So there are people who, you know, they just want to speak a few times a year, and they want to primarily do, you know, coaching or consulting. And I just want to speak 5 times a year and focus on writing books. That's fine. And other people that want to speak 100 times a year and don't want to do anything else, that's also fine. So again, just making sure that you're really clear on what it is that you want to do with speaking and how speaking fit into your business.
And how often do you speak a year, or in your height, how often did you speak?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's not nearly as much as I used to. So I used to do around 60 or 70 gigs a year. And now I'll do, you know, 5 to 10. And it kind of depends on the type of setting and what the event is. But but again, I think that's a good example of it can always be evolving and changing depending on what your goals and ambitions are as a speaker.
Right. I guess the aim as well is if you can combine it with a holiday. So, you know, you get a gig in a country that you wanted to go on holiday in anyway, and that's a good way of getting there.
Yes, absolutely. And so that's, again, another kind of a perk of speaking is travel. I'll give you a quick example. There's a friend of mine here locally in Nashville who a year or two ago, he doesn't do a ton of speaking, but he got invited to speak at something in, I think it was in Spain. And he reached out and he's like, I don't know, how much do I quote for this, or what do I do? And we kind of talked it through, and they had a little bit lower budget than what he would have liked. And I said, here's one thing we can negotiate. We can negotiate basically a vacation out of it. And so they ended up paying for his wife to come along with him, and paid for several extra nights of hotel. And so he was able to go do a speaking engagement and got paid some, but also was able to stick around for several days and kind of turn it into a little European vacation. And so it was a win for him in that standpoint. So yeah, there's a byproduct of speaking is you naturally are typically going to travel a lot, and it gives you, you know, a lot of opportunities to travel if that's something that you're interested in.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, that's a really good kind of overall overview. Just from your personal kind of point of view, do you look back on this and feel that, you know what, I fulfilled my dream, you know, this is exactly what I always wanted to do? Or do you feel that you got into it accidentally? Does it feel like you're fulfilled in what you're doing, or it's become more business-like?
No, I've always been very intentional about, again, kind of going back to one of the things we touched on at the beginning on the quote is, you know, who you are is more important than what you do. Like, basically meaning that, like, we all have to work. We all have to eat and live indoors. We all have to do something. So I'd rather do something I enjoy, you know? And so I really, really enjoy what it is that I get to do. I love the fulfillment of being able to help other speakers who many of whom were where I was when I got started, where I felt like I had the potential, but I needed the plan. I love speaking. I wanted to do more of it, but I didn't know what to do. And so I know that the book, I know that our podcast, our various resources and tools and training help people mm-hmm. accomplish that and help people share their message with the world. So I absolutely love what I get to do now.
That's great. And is it something, I know people ask me, do I want my kids to be lawyers? And I'm kind of like, if they want to, but I'm not determined. Do you see your children becoming speakers? Do they want to be? Do you think that they should stay away from it? What's your view on that?
I mean, if they wanted to, that's totally fine. If they don't want to, that's totally fine. I'm not going to lose sleep either way. So yeah, I want them to do what they want to do and what they're excited about and passionate about. I could see one of them having kind of the personality for it. My wife is very quiet and very shy, and right. The idea of being on stage is just a horrible idea to her. but I have, our middle daughter is kind of similar to that, but our youngest daughter is, she's the spitball of the family. And so I could see her doing something like that, but if she wanted to pursue it, cool. If she wants to do something totally unrelated and different, that's also fine.
Cool. That's lovely. Hey, listen, Grant, that has been such good value. I mean, I've learned so much from it already, and I know when it kind of drops, people are going to really love it. So thank you so much for sharing that information. Again, everyone, just go out and buy the book. Go to speakerlab.com and check out what Grant does. You've got some great free training on there as well, which I know is a really good introduction to the topic as well. And some great bonuses that came with the book as well, which I've got. So I'm really enjoying those. So thank you. Thank you so much on that, Grant. Really appreciated.
Cool, man.
So listen, the final part of this is the quick 10 fire round, which is just 10 quick questions. You don't think about it. Don't, agonize over the answers. No right or wrong answer. It's just kind of your instinctive thoughts. So I hope you've got a few more minutes just to stick around for that.
Yeah, let's go.
Before we carry on. Okay. So question number one, is there any one person from history that you would have loved to see speak in person?
I think a Martin Luther King Jr. would be amazing. His I Have a Dream speech would have been really cool to see.
Absolutely. Yep, great. Love that. Okay. Question two, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech?
It depends on the gig. So sometimes the bigger the gig is, the bigger the gig, the higher the number goes. But I think nerves are completely natural for most speakers.
Absolutely, they are. Okay, question three. I heard you talk about the steakhouse versus the buffet, and I love a good steak. So what's the best part of the steak for you, the rump, the sirloin, or the ribeye?
Good question. I'd probably go with a good filet. Good filet. I'm gonna go with that. Medium right. Well, maybe.
Cool. Okay, I'm a ribeye man myself.
Okay.
I love
right,
the fat grains inside.
Yep.
Question four. Love, wealth, or happiness? If you could only have one, which would it be?
Love, wealth, or happiness? Oh man, I gotta choose. I'd go with my wife. I'd go with love. We'll figure out the other parts.
Yeah, that's the right answer, by the way,
right.
If your wife's listening. Okay, question five. If you had to relive one day for the rest of your life, like Groundhog Day, what day would that be?
Let's see here. Well, it'd be hard to, it's hard to pick between the three kids being born. Those are pretty solid days, but I'll go with my wedding day. It was an amazing day marrying my best friend. So, we'll keep the theme going and her shout out.
That's the childhood sweetheart, right?
Exactly.
That's lovely. Yeah. Question six, if you could only listen, speak, or see, which would you choose?
Listen, speak, or see. I will go, oh man, dude, that's tough. I think I'd go see.
Yeah. That's I think the one that I would go for. I think it's the one that most people have chosen, actually.
Okay. I think see.
Because if you can see, then you can kind of effectively listen because you can liberate all of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, we'll go see.
Okay. Seven. Cool. Seven is favorite album or favorite book or favorite movie or all three if you know them instinctively.
Yeah. I don't listen to a ton of music, actually. I listen to a bunch of podcasts on a variety of different genres and topics. But one of my favorite books is a book called Rework. Jason Fried. Is a very good book. Really like that one. I don't watch a ton of movies either. I'm kind of boring, so we'll go with the book for now.
All right, cool, it works. Question eight, if your kids were to describe you in three words, what would they say?
Fun, hardworking, and caring.
No, oh, lovely. Okay, cool. You better ask them afterwards.
I will. Now I'm curious.
Yeah. Question 9. What was your favorite period of life? Kind of education, you know, school, uni, that period. Mm-hmm. Early work life or now?
I like now. Honestly, I really like where I'm at. I'm like where how things are. You know, our kids are at an age where they're all, you know, they're really fun. They have just distinct personalities. Wife and I are at a great stage of life. So business is good. So yeah, I really like where we are today.
Perfect. That's lovely. Okay. And final question, question 10. Which actor would play you in the movie of your life?
Will Smith.
Cool. I think has the Bad Boys movie come out yet?
I think so. I think it is out.
Okay, right. Well, we'll have to go and watch that. Okay, Paul, perfect. Thank you for taking part in that. Just a little bit of fun to kind of end things with. Listen, just tell us where we can find you, when people want to go to find you. What's the best place that they can kind of look into and learn more?
Yeah, everything that we do is over at thespeakerlab.com, thespeakerlab.com. The book is called The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for Booking Gigs, Getting Paid, Building Your Platform. We have a podcast called The Speaker Lab Podcast as well. So yeah, no shortage of free resources and tools. Anything we can do to help and serve and support speakers, we're in for.
Excellent, excellent. Listen, everybody, do go and check that out. It really is great, great stuff. He gives away a lot of stuff for free, which just means that you know somebody's giving value, because you don't do that if you're not putting your heart and soul into it. So please go and check it out. Very, very much appreciated, Grant. As you know, we say goodbye in a different language on each podcast episode. And I like with the quote, I give that privilege to my guests. So if you have a language you can say goodbye in, please tell us what the language is and then tell us what it is.
Man, I am limited in my
Google Translate.
I'm really good in English and I speak a lot of English, so I'll stick to that. But I'll throw in a adios. That's about all that I can
there
come up
go.
With at
cool.
the moment.
Well, how if we're in Tennessee, how would I say bye if I was in Tennessee?
Probably see y'all later or something like that. I don't know, something
there
like that.
There you go. Okay. Cool. All right, we'll take see y'all later. Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much, Grant. It's been really wonderful value. Great speaking with you. Personally, for me, I've learned a lot, which I'm going to be digesting, and I'm sure our audience has as well. So it's really appreciate you having that, joining us. Thank you very much, my great communicators. I will see you on the flip side in the next episode. Not sure what that will be, but we'll find out soon. See you in a couple of weeks. Bye.